Hello, and welcome to the Learning Mate podcast, where we speak to subject matter experts in the fields of education, education technology, and workforce development to learn more about advances and issues in the industry from cradle to career. I'm your host, Keith Chandler, and in today's episode, prompt engineering. It's a game-changing technology that can be harnessed to create better learning experiences. To talk to me about prompt engineering, the craft principle, and how it's being applied in learning design, please welcome my guest, Rachel Lyons.
Thank you so much for having me, Keith. I can talk about AI and prompt generation all day, so buckle up.
I'm ready for it, Rachel. Rachel has nearly 15 years of experience working in education, 10 of those working directly with instructional design and learning design. She studied English, biology, and psychology and has a bachelor's from Tulane University and a master's in forensic science with a crime scene concentration. I'm fascinated by that, by the way. And on top of that, Rachel has owned and operated her own photography business since 2012. Before we talk about prompt engineering and getting into the meat and potatoes of the episode and how this all applies to the work that you do, I'd like to begin with an understanding of your why in education. So, you know, from teaching classes in forensic disciplines to now designing learning experiences on, you know, an interdisciplinary scale, what inspired you to be an educator or work in the education field?
Yeah, I kind of got thrust into it, I would say. I mean, obviously, I have a lifelong love of learning. I've got my master's, right? So higher education has always been like my natural environment. But when I was working as a homicide investigator, a crime scene investigator for Phoenix PD, it happened out of necessity. People would come to me with really specific questions about like certain scientific techniques that we would be using, mainly photography. I would have detectives come up to me all the time screaming that their cameras didn't work. And my response was always, it's not the camera, it's you. You know, figuring out puzzles, it has always been what drives me. It's like a passion of mine, which got me into forensics to begin with. But being able to explain to people how something works, why it works, that is a puzzle in and of itself. And so whenever I would have that and people would come and ask me these questions, it would get my puzzle brain going and I would try to figure out ways to explain things to people, coming to them where they're at. So that's really where, learning and education really kind of took the forefront of my life. And so training my coworkers, other crime scene specialists, other detectives, and then that shifted into teaching in-person classes for forensic biology at a local college. And that shifted into being a full-time instructor online for forensics and for crime scene. And and then that I ended up meeting Stu Van Orney, our illustrious VP of instructional design over here at Learning Mate. He and I have been coworkers and friends for longer than I would like to admit, about 15 years at this point.
About as long as you've been working in education, right?
Yes. And he said, come over to the dark side, get into instructional design. I'll teach you everything you need to know. You're creative enough. So let's get this rolling. And that's how I got into instructional design.
So let's turn to prompt engineering real quick, because this is something that I've been experimenting with, as well as many of our listeners, I'm sure have been over the last few months and maybe even years as this technology grows and expands. So let's set the stage a bit. And how do you define prompt engineering? And can you describe your journey in learning how to use it?
Yeah. So I think of prompt engineering, to me, it's figuring out the best way to talk to a particular bot. So whether that's ChatGPT or Midjourney or Crea or Magnific or any of these tools that, you know, we can dive into that have been released over the past, I guess, about a year, and they've been being released like every minute, it feels like. I wake up and there's a new tool or a new version. There's just so many of them. But how do I engineer a prompt or a set of instructions to get the best results in the least amount of time? So it's quality and efficiency is really like what I'm focusing on. So it started thinking about this for a course development project that we at LearningMate were hired, you know, about 6 months ago to work on. We had an incredibly large amount of content to generate, and we started experimenting with ChatGPT. That was where we started to generate pretty much everything we needed, from video scripts to custom readings, quiz question banks. And then we also dove into Midjourney, which is a image generation bot, for those that haven't played with it yet, for image generation. And then it turned out that we also needed audio generation. And so we started using Well Said Labs, which was originally the bot that LearningMate had used in previous projects. But we quickly shifted to using 11 Labs for a multitude of reasons. But their quality is phenomenal. So that was a new one. So each bot's different. And when you're doing craft engineering, it's like you're speaking different languages, and you have to learn those different languages to talk to the different bots. And so that's how I think of prompt engineering.
Yeah. Interesting. So how do you actually kind of figure out how to speak to a specific bot? How do you determine how that language should be crafted?
You know, the builders who made these incredible machines, these bots, have listened to everybody as they're using it. And each version they come out with shifts a little bit, right? So for Midjourney, we were screaming at them that we couldn't get things to look photorealistic, right? Like it would make like a beautiful painting or an awesome cartoon looking thing. But every time you wanted to generate a photo, it was like, you could just tell it was AI, you know, like there was something wrong. It was just not. And they listened to that, and they listened to what are the words that photographers use to get like certain shots, right? So for a while, for Midjourney version 4, I think it was, when you were prompting, you were like, okay, I gotta say my lens length, I have to talk about depth of field, I have to like use photographer words. Then they rolled out the next version. I think we're on version 6 now, and they've made it so all of the kind of the crafting that we learn is not really applicable anymore. So to me, that's really where craft comes in. Under like any of these bots, if you follow the prompt engineering craft layout, and there are a bunch of different ones that are out there, and craft means different things to different people. It stands for an acronym for different things, which we'll talk about. But if you follow that, it really makes you ask the questions that you need to ask regardless of the bot. What do you want the bot to do? And you would think that that is very simple, but it turns out to get it to do what you want, you do have to almost. Now, I'm going to say this, and then, you know, Chat 4.0 just came out. And so the guys totally are change, working, right? Like, they're working on making none of what I'm about to tell you guys about relevant anymore, right? Because it's changing so fast. But I have played around with it, and it is still relevant up to now because of what these bots are, right? Like, these bots, what they're pulling from, what their knowledge base is the world.
Yeah.
It's everything. It is the internet, right? Which isn't even really a thing. So when you think about that, it makes sense that you would have to give the bot some kind of background and specifics about who you are and what you want, or else it's going to be very generic. And then it turns out to not be the quality that you want, right? Because it's pulling from everywhere, trying to please everyone. So it makes sense that these bots are, I mean, it's kind of like an employee, right? Like you have to, if you're hiring somebody to do a specific task, you have to tell them what that task is. You have to have a job description, right? Like these are the things that I want you to be able to do. This is what's important, right? It's the same thing. When you're talking to a bot, you have to give it some details as to who you are. And what you want for now. I mean, until they're like implanted in us and then they'll like know everything. But for now, this is still valid. So
And you mentioned how this technology is changing every day. So it's so important to, in fact, keep ourselves educated on how it is changing so we can still use it to in any way that we need to, whether it's, you know, enhance our jobs or utilize it in our daily life outside of our occupations. Speaking of education, you recently wrote a blog post on how to write very comprehensive generative AI prompts using the craft principle, which you have referred to a few times. So can you talk to us about the craft principle, what it stands for, and provide a couple of key ways that this helps learning designers specifically get the most out of using AI tools like ChatGPT?
So CRAFT, for me, and the way my team uses it, is an acronym, and it stands for context, role, action, format, and target audience. But like I was saying, it's really more of a guideline for talking to the chatbot. So it helps you make sure that you're giving the bot all the necessary details for a given task. Because it's a large language model, right? And it's tempting to just talk to it, right? To just say, like, this is what I want, because it feels like you're talking to a human, especially now with 4.0, which is very creepy. We've kind of reached the like her level of, I don't know if you guys saw a movie, but you know, as of today, that is still not the case. You are not talking to a human, you are talking to a bot. So you have to remember that bot is pulling from a huge, you know, incredibly wide reference point, which is the entire world, right? Which we just talked about. And that's everything online. So you have to use specific prompts so that it knows how to tailor its responses to what you actually need. Okay, so context. What is context? Context is, it's pretty simple. And for now, I would say, so if you're sitting down at the at ChatGPT right now, there's a little box there, right? That you can basically text with the bot in. That's what it is. And for now, what we have found is rather than putting all of this, what I'm about to explain to you guys as craft, into one big long prompt, it is very helpful to chop up your directions that you give the bot into multiple messages. It'll keep a chat log for you. Okay. So there's a chat and you start it, and it could be, you know, I'm an instructional designer that needs to make a question bank, you know, for whatever. Mm-hmm. It will start a chat and that will keep track of that in the left-hand side. And then each message that you send is within that chat. Okay. So it's important to realize that in one chat, you can train the bot to get you what you want, right? Yeah. But if you shift and decide, okay, I was having it write a bunch of multiple choice questions for me, now I want it to write a video script, it's important to shift over into a new chat, right? Yes. For now, like, everybody is working on making bots that kind of do all of this at once for you. But that's not the case right now. So my team and I had a long conversation about why you have to do this, because it seems kind of arduous. It seems like you're doing a lot to get the bot to do what you want. But I promise you, it will save you time in the long run, because what it will generate from your very detailed instructions is going to be better. It's going to be higher quality. And once you get it set up, then you can just, I mean, you can knock this stuff out at a crazy lightning speed. So that's the area that we're at, right? We're sitting, we're talking to the chatbot. So the first thing that I'm going to tell it is actually not context. It's not C. It's a prep prompt. So I'm telling the bot, hey, I'm going to give you a list of instructions. I want you to review the instructions with each step, and then I want you to confirm that you understand it by responding with, and then you can say whatever. I usually say read, like in quotes, R-E-A-D, and then we move on to the next step. So that's a guardrail for the bot, right? Because sometimes when we're talking, we don't realize it, but we to bot to do something. And we think we're just giving it like a one, you know, like one sentence, like we're talking to a human, like, hey, I'm going to have you do this, but first I'm going to tell you all about this, this, and this. And then you send it and you're like, oh, what? Like, no, don't start. I have many other steps. So that is always at the end of each of my messages that I send in a particular chat. It's, you know, confirm that you understand this by responding with this, and we'll go on to the next step. Okay. So that's my first prompt, regardless of what I'm making. It's always that to tell it, I'm going to give it a set of instructions and to hold off, right, until I tell it to actually go. So that's that. So that's my prep prompt. Context is pretty simple. It is telling the bot who you are and what you want to make, right? So in my situation here at LearningMate, we have a global team, right? And so we have instructional designers in India. We have instructional designers in South Africa. We have everybody all over the place. But our clients are mainly US based. And so when I tell the bot who I am, I give it a global context too, because there is some difference there, right? Yeah. So I tell it, I am an instructional designer for a company based in the United States. I have a client that needs what? Let's say they need a question bank of 50 questions about medical terminology. Okay. So I'm going to tell it that that's what I need to make. And then like, that's it. It can be like three sentences, four sentences. Context doesn't have to be crazy. You don't have to put everything under the kitchen sink in there, because you're going to do that in the other steps. Okay.
Keep it short and sweet.
Yeah. And that's definitely, I would say, keep that in mind as you are chatting with the bot, as you're sending these messages. Short and sweet is good for two reasons. Until you get to giving the bot data, which can be quite lengthy at times, that's fine, because it can handle that. It can handle data and it can handle examples like that are very, very long. What it cannot do is hold priorities, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But anyway, when you're giving it instructions about things, you want to keep it short and sweet. You also want to keep it short and chunked into these CRAFT, you know, templates to keep you sane as well. There have been times where I'm working with the bot and I'm like, WTH, you know, like, why did you do this wrong? And then I look back and realize I copy and pasted wrong. I told it the wrong thing. I left some variable out of it that I didn't realize. And when you break it up like this, it's much easier to catch that, right? Instead of writing some big, long introduction that are three pages long, where's your error, right? This way, if I get unexpected results from my bot, I can be like, why? Oh, I screwed up back in format. I didn't tell it X, Y, or Z. So keeping them short and keeping them organized is super important, not just for high quality from the bot, but also to catch human errors, like human in the loop errors. So that's important. Okay, so here we are. Context, we're in the instructional designer. Okay, so that's context. The role. The role is what I tell the bot I want it to do. And so those are two different things, right? I've now explained to the bot who I am, but now I need to tell the bot who it needs to be. Because remember, it is everything to everyone, right? It can be an ad, you know, agency president, or it can be a web developer, or it can be an instructional designer, right? So what I would tell the bot in this situation is, you are a expert level, world-class, whatever you want to say, instructional designer who always does these things. And this is where you can put in some important things for the bot to consider when it's generating. So for example, something I've noticed that a lot of people have left out when talking to the bot is DEI considerations, right? Yeah. Diversity, equity, and inclusion, right? So if I'm writing a bunch of multiple choice questions and it's patient cases, for example, right? Like the student has to like read about a patient and then, you know, they need to answer questions about it. I want to be sure that the bot, when they name my patient, keeps DEI in mind, right? So when they make these patients, not everybody should be named John Smith, a white male, you know, like who's 25 years old, like don't do that, right? So when you explain the role to the bot, you can get real specific about, you know, style guidelines. You can tell it, you know, globally, like what, you know, who you want it to be, right? Yeah. If you want it to be, and you can tell it, what you want it to be an expert in. And so for me, I usually tell it, you know, yes, that they're, you know, world-class instructional designer, but they also have a very deep knowledge of, and then fill it in, right? So that can be, you know, anatomy and physiology or medical terminology or quantum physics or, you know, graphic design, right?
Yeah.
You tell the bot the part of the world that you want it to reference when it's generating things for you. So that's role. So the action step is kind of like the meat of a ChatGPT conversation. The action is where you tell the bot what you want it to do. So I've told it my context, who I am, I've told it who it is, and now I'm going to get into what I want it to do. Sometimes the action step can be relatively simple. If it is, you know, if say you just want 5 questions about the Pythagorean theorem, okay, right? Like, that's pretty simple. And that in that action, I can say, based on the context and the role, because you always kind of want to refer back when you're getting ready to tell it to do something, I want you to generate this. I want you to write 5 multiple choice questions about the Pythagorean theorem. But it's never that simple, right? like as instructional designers, we have a lot of priorities. And this is where it's important to understand where the bot has issues, okay? So you are talking to a computer. You are not talking to a human that has a shared understanding of things, right? So I can say to another instructional designer, I want you to, you know, make these 5 questions, or I want you to make these 50 questions. And as an instructional designer, they will know, okay, there's got to be an outcome that it aligns to. It's got to be certain content, right, that I'm, you know, referring to and things like that. Okay, let's just take those 2 priorities. There's an outcome that a question has to align to, and there's content that the student or whoever's answering these questions will have read, right? And it has to be based on that content. It can't be based on some other content that has to do with this outcome, right?
Yeah.
And it has to align specifically to this outcome. The bot has a hard time holding priorities is what I call it. I don't know what other people have called it, but that's what I call it. Meaning, if you give the bot instructions to do both of these things at the same time, it freaks out. Yeah. It can, right? It, or what's very interesting is that sometimes it will catch human error, I almost want to say. What we have run into is that it will just say, okay, here's an example. The outcome that she wants me to align this question to is about breast health, okay, for cancer, okay? But the content that I give it is about neurology. Right.
Yeah.
And so it has stopped me before because I copy and pasted wrong. Right. I gave it the wrong content and I was like, write it about this outcome. And it said, well, I'm sorry, but the chapter or, you know, the 18 pages that you just gave me don't have anything to do with this outcome.
Yes.
So I can't write that. You need to provide me something else. Sometimes it'll do that. Sometimes it, because it doesn't know that both of those are equally important, right? It might say, okay, the outcome is the highest priority. So I'm just going to pull from other content. That's a problem for an instructional designer, right? You can't be testing people on content that you didn't actually, right? So that's what I mean by it's difficult for the bot to hold priorities. So you have to divide it up. And in the action prompt, so I would never have one action message that says, I want you to write, you know, 50 multiple choice questions, or a bank of 50, they align to this outcome and they are based like all on this content, boom, and like upload an entire textbook or something. Like I would never do that. Right. What I would do is say, okay, I need you to write these questions. They are based on this outcome. Then I, as an instructional designer, will look and say, okay, even though it's one outcome, maybe they're enabling outcomes, right?
Yeah.
What particular content do I want it to focus on for this particular outcome? But, you know, we never just have one outcome that we're writing an entire quiz bank on, right?
Oh, like, yeah, there's multiple outcomes.
Right. And so I would never tell the bot, here's a big list of 18 different enabling outcomes, and you figure out what content aligns with which, and then write me questions based on that.
Yeah.
It's too much, right? Because you've now told it two priorities. It's a ton of content. It's a ton of outcomes. And sometimes it will make one more important than the other. So you have to do some back end work. I call it back end thinking for the bot, right? Because you're not talking to a human that understands these things. And also, it's a large language model. So it's not even like, you know, 1 + 2 = 3. Like you put in 1 and then you put in 2 and it always gives you 3. It's not that. It's a creative bot, right? It's generating creative content. And so unless you are very specific with your steps and chunking the content and doing some of that back end thinking, you won't understand why in the end it gave you something that was totally wrong or not based on what you wanted. So this action. So my action step, although it is one in the craft principle, for instructional design, it's always many messages. I'll tell it one action that I want it to do. And then I'll say it's going to be based on a data set. And here's the first data set. And, you know, so usually my action prompts are like 5 or 6 messages, depending on what I'm creating.
I was going to say the learning designer becomes the prioritizer in that step for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And I have also found that the bot works really well off of examples. And so while I will explain to it what I want it to do, I usually will do one of what I want it to do and then give it an example. Right. So I'll say, I want you to write this multiple choice question. It has to be aligned to this outcome and it needs to be from this content. Here is an example of what I mean by that. Right. And then I will list the outcome. I will write a question. I will write, you know, the answers. I'll write the feedback. I don't get into that stuff, explaining exactly how I want it to do that until the next step, which is formatting. Mm-hmm. Because remember, we're trying to keep these messages that we send to the bot as short and concise as possible for our own sanity, not just the bots. So in the formatting, I tend to give a lot of examples as well, right? So if I want it to list just the number and the letter of the outcome, 1A. I don't want it to write out the whole long thing. Like every time I'll show them that as an example. And then, you know, it can be as simple as if you want the multiple choice responses to be lettered or you want them to be numbered, right? Like the kind of little formatting stuff that takes forever, you can tell the bot right off the bat, like do it like this so that you don't have to redo it. Feedback, like that's amazing. Like being able to tell the bot, hey, when you write the feedback, I want it to look like this. So I want it to say if the answer is correct and why it's correct. And then the next feedback, if it's incorrect, why it's incorrect, you can decide to say what the correct answer is, if that's appropriate for whatever assessment you're making. And then maybe you want it to reference a certain part of the chapter or the reading that you base this off of, you put that right in there, right? I mean, the amount of time that this saves is astronomical when it comes to formatting. So the formatting step, I have found that people naturally try to skip over it like a little bit do that at your peril because it just saves you so much time. The bot is smart, is it not? I don't know. We could have a whole debate about that, but it is a very fast processor. It can process things and make things very, very quickly. But I would argue that it still is not as fast as a human when it comes to designing, right? And like figuring out what it needs to look like, right? So that's my argument. But anyway, so that's why the formatting step is very important, because that is really where the bot shines, in my opinion. It can generate this stuff incredibly, incredibly fast. And if you tell it the right instructions, it can do it so that you don't have any formatting to mess with, which is a major time suck for anyone that works anywhere. So there's that. The last prompt is target audience. So you kind of hit on some of this stuff in context, you kind of hit on some of it in role, but it's important to let the bot know who's using this, right? Like there have been times where I'm working with a bot to create an outline for me, right? Like, I don't want it to write the whole article yet. I want it to outline. And so the target audience is quite different, right? The target audience for the outline is me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to use this outline to then help you basically later on, ChatGPT, like write entire sections of articles or an entire book or whatever. Yeah. But the target audience, the bot needs to know who the end user is, because it can tailor it for that. For the project that we were working on, we had it was almost 300 plus different deliverables that we had to give. And those were video scripts, and those were case studies, and those were a bunch of different things. And I would tell it, okay, this is the type of student that is going to be using these. And what is that type of student, right? Like, is it a corporate, like, you know, workforce learner? No, this is a, you know, community college student who appreciates real world examples. They have to feel like what they're learning is applicable in the real world. Those are two very different students, right? That could be studying the same content. So telling the bot the target audience can generate a higher quality deliverable if you flesh out that target audience. Makes you think about it too, right? So it's the craft principle is really helpful, not just for the bot, but also for the humans, the humans in the loop that are telling the bot what it needs to make. When you really get into the bot and realize how it works, you realize there's so much back-end thinking that you still have to do, but that it is incredibly fast at generating something from processing, right? Like, it can write those 50 questions for me in under a minute. Now, I have to give it a lot of instruction to make sure that they're right. And I still have to go through it and check them to make sure that, you know, because it says right there on ChatGPT underneath that little window that you communicate with all the time, it says ChatGPT makes mistakes. Always check important stuff or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
It's there. It's on every page. So, like, no one can ever be like, ChatGPT ruined my life. Because they're like, disclaimer right here. Like, you as a human, there's still so much design, right? That has to happen to use these tools. So it's not replacing instructional designers. It is giving instructional designers a very, very powerful tool to make things at a high quality and way faster than we ever have before.
Taking things that would take days, weeks, months, maybe even years in the past is now taking a matter of minutes, like you said. So
yeah. Another thing that we didn't really talk about was the human in the loop step. And that was one of my biggest learnings in experience. Well, specifically with ChatGPT, we kind of thought use chatbot right off the bat to generate everything, and then have SMEs or subject matter experts or humans, instructional designers review it. And it turns out it is very important to have the human in the loop really early on, because that will save you so much time in the long run. And Stu and I have thought of many different allusions and ways to explain this. I think the one he came up with was really great, where, like, say you're like working in a restaurant and you're a sous chef, okay? And head chef is like, we're making beef Wellington today. You could run off to the grocery store and use Google or use chat or use whatever to look at all of the different recipes that beef Wellington has, right? And then you could get all of those ingredients, you come back and you could ask the bot to write instructions for you and tell you exactly how to do it. And you can make it and you show it to chef and they're like, this is not at all what I wanted, right? Because I said we were making beef Wellington, but we're actually making a vegan version of it, or like something crazy, right? So it doesn't make sense to go run off into bot land where the world is out there without some type of guidance first. And that we found was really, really important in our particular project. We were having it generate video scripts. And, you know, videos, getting a good script can take humans working together weeks and weeks and weeks, right? Yeah. I can generate a script in under a minute, right? With ChatGPT. But it was not what our subject matter experts wanted. And so that gave me very specific directions in the action area about the back-end thinking, the back-end design that I needed to do. So rather than just giving it a topic like the pituitary gland or the cardiovascular system, we gave it really specific elements like this script is actually about Josephine, and she's a medical billing and coding person, and she is reviewing a patient chart specifically about this. And so we call them action prompt components that helped us really narrow in what needed to go into the actions part. So getting humans in the loop very early is important. And it's kind of the opposite of what you would think. You think generate all of this stuff really fast and really quickly, have the human review it, right? But it turns out without human design and thought process from the subject matter experts first, we wasted an incredible amount of time for the first few, just generating stuff that was not anywhere near what they wanted, right? So why do that? So that's my key takeaway from all of this craziness I've talked to you about today is get that human in the loop very early, and then generate all of your stuff. And then the human comes back to review, but they have to be in the loop early or else you're gonna waste a ton of time.
Thanks for promoting that human element. I think that's really important as well. Just a final question. As a lifelong learner, what is something that you're currently like reading, listening to, watching that you would maybe recommend to our listeners?
Oh, man, so many. There are two podcasts that I'm obsessed with. One is the TED Radio Hour from NPR. Actually, okay, there's three. The other is Hidden Brain, which is also an NPR podcast. And then my third one is not from NPR. It's called Where Should We Begin with Esther Perel. She's like one of the most amazing psychologists, psychiatrists, like who's ever graced this planet, in my opinion. And it's fascinating. And she does like couples therapy, but she also does like How's Work, which is the title of one of her other spinoff podcasts about like, that's all human, right? So my NPR stuff is tech and a lot of like what's cutting edge, what's happening within the world of science and politics and all of that. And then Astera's is really human based. So I love that. And spend 15 minutes watching OpenAI's announcement of Chat 4.0. As I kind of alluded to in the beginning of this episode, I think it is the biggest technological advancement of all time, like not just of AI, but like of all time. 10,000 people watched it. So I just give you a little, the thing that blew my mind was, I mean, everything we've talked about in this episode has been like text-based, right? Like I tell the bot this, I tell it like in written words, like what's to do. But in this video, you see a guy interacting with his phone, which is Chat 4.0. She's talking to him, but he tells it, hey, I'm getting ready to interview. How do you think I look? And that means that his video camera is now showing a visual representation of him to the bot. The bot is now analyzing a visual image. Okay. This is huge. Like, the fact that people are like freaking out about this is insane to me. But the bot then responds, well, you know, I see you're rocking a black hoodie, which gives you that, you know, I've been coding all night look. I mean, not only are they analyzing the visual, but they are putting it, the bot has put it into the context that he already explained, right? Because he was like going for an interview for X, Y, or Z. The fact that a bot can do that is light years from where we were yesterday. I don't know, like a week ago. I mean, the leaps and bounds that these things are making is astronomical. It's not even, I don't have a word for how exponential this change is happening. And we're all around for it. Like we're all alive for it. Like it's very, very exciting stuff. So watch that. It's only 15 minutes long, 15 minute presentation given by OpenAI on YouTube. Just like look up, you know, Chat 4.0, like the letter O, and it'll pop right up for you.
Awesome.
It's crazy.
We'll put that link to our list of resources in the episode that we post. So thank you for that, as well as the link to your blog post, which is about prompt engineering and how to use the craft principle to craft, quote unquote, great prompt engineering. Rachel Lines, thank you so much for joining this episode of the Learning Mate podcast.
Oh, thank you so much, Keith. It was a blast chatting with you. And thanks for letting me talk your ear off about the magic of AI. I appreciate it.
Anytime, anytime. Once again, thank you to our guest today, Rachel Lines. You can find links to all of the media we referenced on our website. That is learningmate.com/podcast, including Rachel's blog post entitled Prompt Engineering, How to Write Killer Generative AI Prompts for LLMs. And links to her recommendations as well, the OpenAI ChatGPT 4.0 introduction video, the TED Radio Hour, the Hidden Brain podcast, and Where Should We Begin podcast. Additionally, on our website, you can find our complete library of episodes, which also is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. If you would like to be a guest or have an idea for an episode, we got you covered there as well. We have a little questionnaire on our website. Just fill that out and start the conversation, and we will see you in our guest room. Once again, visit learningmate.com/podcast. The Learning Mate podcast is a production of Learning Mate Solutions Incorporated. I am your host, Keith Chandler, and until next time, thank you for listening.